You're listening to Manx Radio, and I'm Judith Lay, welcoming you to the podcast of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And that is the music that tells us Howard Parkin is here. Fastamai, Howard, and welcome.
Fastamai, Judith. It's great to be here again, and compliments of the season to you.
And to you. You had a good time?
Wonderful time, thank you. Really good.
Excellent. Now, you have given me a few notes. It's a foolscap sheet of paper. There is clearly a lot that you want to tell us about.
There is indeed. There's lots going on all the time. There's lots going on. But I just try to compress it to literally about 20 minutes we get to talk on this show. It's quite an art, I think.
Indeed it is. But you managed to make every moment count. What about the December skies? Were there anything spectacular that you enjoyed?
Yes, there was. We had some wonderful clear nights. You know, I do my night school classes at the University College here. I managed to take him up stargazing one night. It was absolutely stunning. But best of the lot was we decided to have a Christmas dinner. Instead of having the class on the Tuesday before Christmas, we all went to the Craigna Bar for a meal. And I said, if it's clear, we'll go stargazing. And it was clear. And we all stood there, went to Axenfell, went to one of the dark sky spots, and all went stargazing. And we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. Because this really is, I stress this every time I do this show this time of the year, it's the best time of the year for stargazing because there's so many bright stars around. And we've got Jupiter dominating the sky. In fact, if we're going to do a topic today, it's Jupiter. There's so much to talk about Jupiter in the show tonight. I'll be talking about that quite a bit in the next few minutes. But it's just a great time of the year. So just go out there and have a look and look for yourselves. And that very bright star you see in the sky towards the east at about 9, 10 o'clock at night, that, of course, is Jupiter. It's not a star.
Right. Now, just before we come back to Jupiter and any other planets that you may want to be telling us about, full moon on the 3rd of January.
Indeed, yeah. Only a few days' time. We've got the full moon on the 3rd of January. And it's actually the first supermoon of the year. Now, as you probably know, I joke about supermoons because I don't like the expression. But if it makes people look at the sky, all to the good. Well, the first full moon of the year, the 3rd of January, is in fact a supermoon. It is ever so slightly bigger than normal and slightly brighter because it's that much bigger. But again, use my experiment. I tell you all the time, little finger at arm's length will cover the full moon no matter where it is in the sky, no matter whether it's a full moon, wimpy moon or no moon.
Yeah, for somebody who doesn't like the term supermoon, I find it slipping into the programme very frequently.
I'm afraid so. I've given up, you see. I've come to the conclusion, as I say, if it makes people look and think.
Yeah.
I mean, the moon is beautiful at the moment. It's approaching. It's three quarters now. It's well on its way to full. If it's first, about Saturday. Saturday's the 3rd, isn't it? Saturday's the 3rd, so we've got less than a week to go now till it's full. Hmm. And then, of course, it'll start its journey all over again, going back round to being new and then full again. So that's gone. But full moon, indeed, we've got a super moon on the January and February. And then I think there's another one in November, I think, from on my records.
So now let's pitch in on the subject of the planets, because not only Jupiter, but there's Venus, Mars and Mercury.
Yeah, there's
to talk
a lot
about.
Going on at the moment, because if we consider the heavens, if you imagine God's eye view of the heavens looking down on the planets, all three planets of Venus, Mars and Mercury are all the other side of the sun to us. They're all at what we call a solar conjunction. They're the other side of the sun to us. And it's not particularly unusual. It's not particularly relevant. You can't see them, of course. But the big one, of course, is Venus. Venus is very bright indeed. And Venus goes behind the back of the sun on the 9th of January. The 6th of January. Venus goes behind the sun on the 6th of January. It will then re-emerge into our evening skies. From the end of January onwards, it'll be in the evening skies. Mars, in the meantime, a few days later, on the 9th of January, will also go around the back of the sun. When I say around the back of the sun, it doesn't mean they're necessarily behind the sun, but they're in the same part of the sky as the sun, because the tilt of the orbits means that they're sometimes above or below, or indeed behind. So it doesn't really matter, because you can't see them anyway. But Mars, of course, takes 2 years to go around the sun, so there'll be another full year when Mars will be at what we call opposition, and more about that in just a moment. But we've also got, just thrown into the mix as well, on the 21st of January, Mercury is in line with the Earth, or the planet Mercury, then the Sun, and then the Earth, all in a line together. But just to add to the whole mix, I mentioned Jupiter just a moment ago, because Jupiter is at the exact opposite part of the sky to the Sun. On the January the 10th, Jupiter actually goes through what we call opposition. And we astronomers love names, but sometimes the names are easy to explain. The term opposition means when an object is exactly opposite to the Sun. So we talk about conjunction of Venus, Mars and Mercury. The opposite of that is opposition. The technical term is opposition is the date when the ecliptical longitude of Jupiter is 180 degrees offset from the ecliptical longitude of the Sun. Boring astronomy stuff. The reality is it means it's exactly opposite in the sky to where the Sun is. And that's where Jupiter is. And just to throw into the mix, Saturn, the other planet, Saturn, the missing naked eye planet in the list of planets I've just mentioned. If we imagine a clock face with the Earth's in the middle of the clock and the other planets are at 12 o'clock, Jupiter's at 6 o'clock, Saturn's around the 8, 9 o'clock position. So quite a lot of planetary activity going on. When I do my night school class, I always tell them about what's going on with the planets, and maybe a planet is at opposition or elongation or whatever. But I've actually got four of the five planets have all going through a major planetary position in the month of January. So something to look forward to. But Jupiter at opposition. I need to talk about Jupiter quite a bit to you, because Jupiter is quite magnificent at the moment. Now, only the other day, yesterday in fact, the 27th of December, we left our son who lives in London to drive up to Liverpool to get the boat back. And as we're driving up the motorway, we left very early because the boat was at 1 o'clock. As we're driving up the M1, you could see the planet Jupiter setting in the western sky. It was very, very easy to see because the sky was dark. And we watched Jupiter slowly getting down as the sun came up. You could see Jupiter quite a long time. So I thought nothing more of that, other than the fact it was a beautiful morning and we saw it. Lo and behold, when we get to the Isle of Man at 6 o'clock at night yesterday, there's Jupiter in the eastern sky rising. And I thought, wow, I've never seen that before. It's not particularly special, but it was just uncanny to see it setting slowly in the west in the morning. And then when we're driving on the prom going home to Onchan last night, it was rising in the east.
But, you know, isn't that wonderful that, Howard, for all the years that you've been doing this and for all the knowledge that you have, that you can still see things that you think, oh, wow, you know.
Yeah, I put it out to my wife because she said, what's that star over there? That's a star, it's Jupiter. We saw that this morning. So you just think of the logistics of that. The Earth has turned on its axis. It isn't the sky moving like the ancients used to think. The whole motion of the Earth has turned literally 180 degrees. Well, the time I drove up to St. Albans up to get across the Isle of Man. And I just thought, wow, that's worth mentioning that as well. But Jupiter at opposition is well worth looking for because it's going to be quite bright. It has a magnitude of -2.7 and it's in the constellation of Gemini. And we don't mention the supermoon very often and we don't mention astrology very often. But Jupiter's going backwards in Gemini. The astrologers will be having a fit because when planets go backwards, it does all sorts of things to you. It means you get a sore toe, you fall over and hurt your arm, and maybe the cat will run out and I don't know.
I think you're being facetious, Mr. Parkin.
No, heaven forbid, heaven forbid. It's Christmas.
Move on, to be move on.
Moving rapidly on. But no, Jupiter is very easy to spot. And what I'd like listeners to do, and I might have mentioned this last month, look at Jupiter, and just above to the left of it are two very bright stars. The two stars in the constellation of Gemini, Castor and Pollux. And Jupiter is going to the right. It is going right. It is going retrograde. When Jupiter is at opposition, it is going retrograde. It's going backwards across the sky because the Earth has caught up with it, which is what causes retrograde motion to happen. So that's what's happening with Jupiter. The other thing is the moon itself comes in as well, because on the 3rd of January, we've already mentioned the moon is full, and the moon is full right in the middle of the group of stars known as the Pleiades in the constellation of Taurus the Bull. And it will return to them again on the 31st of January. And the Pleiades is that lovely fuzzy group of stars you can see if we look at the stars tonight, and we see Jupiter on the left, the constellation Orion down in the middle, and up to the right, you've got the little group of stars known as the Pleiades, the seven sisters, as some people call it. The moon is going to glide across them on the 3rd of January and again on the 31st of January. So well worth looking out for. When the moon is full, or when you see it there, you're going to not be able to see the stars of the Pleiades very easily, but get a pair of binoculars and have a look, and you'll see them slowly but surely. The moon will go through the whole area of the sky. And we're from the northern part of the British Isles, which is where we are, it's even better than it is in the south. So well worth looking out for. As I say, Jupiter really is our star of the month, and well worth looking out for. And hopefully you'll see some again. Do let us know and report back to me what you might see.
Yeah, this is it. I think it's a good opportunity, Howard, isn't it, to remind people that you do love people to interact with the programme.
Yeah. I love to talk to people.
Now, everybody knows it's only on once a month, but that's not to stop people emailing you in between times.
No,
either with something they'd like you to talk about or with a query or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it's, questions, answers. I love questions. I think I've said to you before, Judith, I love going into schools. I give lots of talks, as you well know, and you talk to a group of adults and you might get three or four questions, you know, people being polite, what can I ask and not appear to be stupid. But when you go to a classroom and it's full of kids, every hand goes up, and the questions, black holes, you name it, the size of the space station, how big is it, you know, all this sort of stuff, it just amazes me. And the kids are just like little sponges, and they don't mind what they ask. If they ask a stupid question, I always say to them, there's no such thing as a stupid question, because they all have something in there that they want to know, and that's what I'm proud to be able to pass on to them.
And that is the beauty of talking to children. We get too inhibited when we get grown
certainly
up.
Certainly do.
We get grown up and we get too inhibited. Right, the Geminids have let you down, haven't they, Howard?
Yes, this is one of the first times that I saw a meteor shower, but I said to people, if you go outside to see the Geminids or the Perseids, sit there for half an hour, you're bound to see one. I didn't see. It was a lovely clear night and I sat there in my garden and I didn't see a single Geminid. I was astounded. And I learnt later quite a few other people were the same. Some people saw one or two, but not many. But then when I took my class stargazing, literally a few nights later, I think it was about the 15th of December, to Axenfell after we'd had our meal at the Craig, there was two bright Geminids went straight through the sky. So I thought, well, we've seen them now, so... And one of our class had never seen any meteors before, so it was a real treat for her as well. But don't be worried about it, because we now have another meteor shower, and this is the one that we always talk about after the event. Well, I'm telling you before, on the 3rd of January, we have the quadrantid meteor shower. Now, I know I've already mentioned we've got a full moon, and it's near Jupiter, it's going over the Pleiades. Look to the northern horizon and you've got this shower called the Quadrantids. Some people regard the Quadrantids as the best shower of the year, because you get more reliable meteors, you get a higher number of meteors, and they tend to be quite bright fireballs. Saw a lovely picture of one the other day from someone taking one on the Isle of Man. So the Quadrantid meteor shower is all well worth looking for. And we've also had recently the Ursid meteor shower as well. So always I'm always talking about meteor showers, because there's pretty well every month we've got a different meteor shower to look at. So, but the quadrant is look north towards the Plough and the area of the sky, looking towards Snaefell if you're south of Snaefell, or look towards Scotland if you're in Ramsey or somewhere, and just look in the northern sky. Usual trick, as I say, always around midnight, but it doesn't necessarily follow accurately all the time. But well worth looking out for. And if you see one, again, let us know. We'd love to know if you've seen any.
Howard, I don't want to trespass on your territory, but there's just something that I spotted actually in the Radio Times, and the name of somebody who has come up a couple of times in different contexts. And I think she's one of these people who could transform how young people look at space. And she is Dame Maggie...
Arden Collett, yes.
Arden Pocock.
Yes.
And she is giving the Royal Institution Christmas lectures.
Yes, she is.
Is there life beyond Earth? And there's a series of lectures, but it's the way she presents herself.
She's wonderful.
She looks so. Have you met her?
I haven't met her. I know of her, and I haven't met her. But she's one of the main presenters of the Sky at Night. There's Maggie and there's Chris Lintott. They're the big two presenters of the Sky at Night programme, which are covered from Patrick Moore. And Maggie's just got this infectious enthusiasm that she passes on to anyone she talks to. She's a lovely lady.
But also, she worked on the James Webb telescope,
didn't she? Yes, she had to work on that as well.
So
she's a very eminent scientist. I think she works at the Open University, I think from memory. I think she's at the Open University. It might be the University College of London, but she's a qualified astrophysicist as well.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
She's very good at, as I say, putting things across as well. Lovely lady.
I was doing my research on Mars.
Oh, right.
But not literally on Mars, about Mars, for in anticipation of Mars coming to the cathedral.
Absolutely.
In February. And I had a series of books that I was offered to have a look at. And there was one by her, written for children, because so it was ideal for me, written for children. But it was just the great way that she presented everything. And she had some little cartoon characters, and she said, see if you can work out which one is me. And but as they all had spacesuits on, it was a pretty tricky.
No, she's a wonderful lady. She's really, I think when the Sky Knight, when we lost Patrick a few years ago now, many years ago now, she was one that came in and replaced him, as it were. And she's just a wonderful character. I'd love to have met her. Have a get on the Isle of Man sometime.
Well, that's your department.
Talking about Mars, quick plug for the cathedral, because we've got the Mars globe coming to the cathedral.
We have.
Like the moon did in February.
Yeah.
I'll be away in February, but what I am doing on the 17th of January, I'm doing a talk in the cathedral all about Mars to sort of set the scene, what you can see and why, and why.
Great.
I'm so fascinated with the red planet. And that's on the 17th of January, so look out for that. And if
Excellent.
You're interested, do come along.
Scribble the details on a bit of paper for me, Howard, and we'll talk about it a little nearer the time.
Yeah.
Because I always like a reminder when these things are coming along. Why don't we take a little music break now? Would this be a good moment,
I
or
think
is there
so.
Anything else?
No, we got I just mentioned the aurora, of course. A lot of people keep seeing aurora, they keep saying to me. It's quite fascinating. My own son says that they've gone to Iceland after Christmas. They've gone to Iceland. Ooh. And I said, oh, you're going to go and see the aurora? No, we saw it from home in October last year. But yes, you can see it from home. You can see it from the British Isles. You can see it from the Isle of Man. But being underneath it in Norway or Iceland is the wow factor. It's great to see from home. And we have seen it from home. And the reason I mention all this is because the sun is still very active at the moment, and there's still a very good chance of getting some more auroras. Only a few days ago, there was a picture on the front of the Isle of Man newspaper, The Courier, aurora seen from Peel. So just keep your eyes and ears peeled. Not so much your ears. Keep your eyes peeled. And
I know what you mean. I know what you mean is...
Freudian slip, man.
If somebody says, keep your ears peeled, so that if somebody says to you, there's an aurora coming tonight, you're listening and you're paying attention.
Exactly,
that's
yeah,
what you
that's
meant.
That's what I meant.
Yes,
of course
see,
it is.
Listen, talking rubbish is my preserve, Alex. Don't be... That's,
sorry.
Right.
Invading your...
Come on, come have a little dance with me. Come on. We're going to have a little waltz with Anne Murray.
Right.
Under the Allegheny moon. Come on your feet, Howard. You know you want to dance.
You don't want to see me
dancing. Allegheny moon, I need your light to help me find romance tonight. So shine, shine, shine. Allegheny moon, your silver beams can lead the way to golden dreams. So shine, shine, shine. High among the stars, so bright above, the magic of your lamp of love can make to you. Please see what you can do for me and for my one and only love. Allegheny it's up to you. Please see what you can do for me and for my one and only love. For me and for my one and only love.
Howard would not dance with me. Do you know why? Because we're in the proper grown-up studio tonight, where there is a television screen that is on, but obviously with the sound off and with subtitling on. And just when I thought he was going to dance around the studio with me, up on the screen it comes, Understanding Dark Energy. Do you think they're tuned into our programme, Howard?
Oh, I hope so. Certainly, I hope they are. I think the BBC uses it as a major source of information.
Right. Well, we'll not tell them anything then. But you, my friends, are listening to the December edition of The Manx Sky at Night with our very own Howard Parkin. Now, traditionally, Howard, in the second part of the programme, we have a look at what's happening in the world of space exploration. So where are we starting?
Well, the big story that only occurred literally a few days ago was the fact that Jared Isaacman has now been appointed as the new NASA administrator. And when a new president takes office, he always appoints a new administrator. And there's a bit of convoluted story about this one. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago. Basically, Isaacman was nominated by President Bush. No, he wasn't. Start again. Rewind. By President Trump. Good Lord. Too much sherry, I think. He was nominated by President Trump way back in April, May time. And then the nomination was withdrawn by the president. This is when he had his little spat with Elon Musk, and it was all to do with that and one thing and the other. Anyway, he eventually re-nominated Jared Isaacman in about September, October time, and Congress then have to question him and do all sorts of investigations and all the rest. And they finally, on the 13th of December, he was approved as the new NASA administrator. Now, what's interesting about Isaacman is he's not the first administrator to be a flown astronaut. There's been three before who have been NASA astronauts, but Isaacman has actually flown into space twice on SpaceX InSight missions, and these missions have been totally privately funded by Isaacman, who made his fortune out of something to do with the internet. And not only has he flown into space twice on these particular missions, but he also did the first ever private spacewalk. Now, they say it was a spacewalk. Basically, what they did, they opened the hatch of the spacecraft and he stuck his head out. But they wanted to test the spacesuit and all the rest. He didn't actually go walking in space like some of the others have done over the years. But he's a very clever bloke, very, very wealthy bloke. And he's very, very interested in space travel, obviously. So a great choice for NASA. And I think he will take NASA forward, but with a business head on as well. Instead of just dreaming about what you want to do, and everyone's got these ideas, but the reality of doing it with budgets and government support and everything else, I think he'll be a great administrator, and I'm looking forward to seeing what his plans are and hopefully taking NASA forward and indeed to landing on the moon, hopefully by, they reckon, that's been pushed back to 28, possibly 29. But they're certainly well on the way. And of course, next month, we'll be talking about this at the end of January. In February, we've got the return to the moon of the Artemis 2 mission. And this mission will be launched officially. It's meant to be launching on the 5th of February. They're going to the moon and back. Not actually landing on the moon, but just going to go around the moon and back again, like Apollo 8 did back in 1968. And that's very exciting. And that'll be a real good start to the space stories of 2026.
Indeed. I think the position of Mr. Isaacman now demonstrates how space exploration and travel and everything has moved on, in that you've got to have a mix of somebody who is brilliant technically and knows what it's all about and also has a commercial brain as well. That's how it's moved on.
I'm afraid so. And I mean, you've got the same with Elon Musk. I mean, I know Elon Musk fell out with Donald Trump for whatever reason. I don't go into the details of that. But these people have got the money, but they've also got the vision. But they've got to have government support and the ears of government involved as well. And Isaacman is certainly doing the right thing. And as I say, I really look forward to seeing what he's going to do.
Indeed, yeah. You know, this, you mentioned there, that, and I know it was, I'm taking it kind of out of context, but you said the words a private spacewalk. And I understand exactly what you were saying there, but it just got me thinking, you know, with more and more organisations getting involved, and how strict is it about who goes up in the air? Who says
it's still
happens?
Very strict indeed. The aviation authorities in the United States in particular are the curse of Elon Musk's life, because every time he wants to launch a rocket, and we've seen some of his successes, we've seen some of his failures, they go through it with a tooth comb and they make sure everything is, the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed and everything else. But they've just announced, it's just been announced literally in the last 2 days or so since Christmas, they've now given a license for SpaceX. They've approved SpaceX's ability to launch their Starship out of Cape Kennedy, which obviously they've got the Boca Chica place in Mexico, in Texas. But this is the new one they're going to launch from Cape Kennedy now, because Starship is literally gearing up all the time now, because that's the one they want to send to Mars. It's the one they want to send the lunar lander with. And Elon Musk has actually stated that he wants to send a Starship to Mars, an unmanned Starship to Mars, by the end of 2026. A bit of pressure on them for that, because I mentioned a moment ago about Mars being around the back of the sun, and it takes 2 years to go around the sun. So launch windows to get to Mars only open up every 2 years. So we've got a launch window to Mars in 2026. The next one is 2028. And they don't want to wait 2 more years, so they're hoping to get it all done this year. So lots of exciting things going on, and we'll just have to wait and see how successful or otherwise they will be.
But 2 years in space is a real problem if you miss it, miss that window of opportunity.
If you miss that opportunity, you've got to wait 2 years, especially to go to Mars or something like that. It depends on where you're going.
Sure,
you've got
yes,
to have the planets have got to be aligned and everything else to get the maximum payload there with the least fuel.
Yeah. So, OK, what's happening with Chinese friends in the air?
Well, this was a story that I won't say I missed it, but basically the Chinese space station Tiangong-1, the Tiangong space station has got three Chinese taikonauts, they're called, and the three taikonauts were up there, and they sent three more to join them. But they found that this craft they were going to bring them back down in had got damaged. One of the windows had a crack in it. So they didn't want to use that spacecraft to bring them down again. So they used the other spacecraft, which was the reserve. There's always two spacecraft. There's a three-man crew. There's two three-man spacecraft to bring them down. One's damaged. They had six people up there. So they sent the three down in the good one, leaving the three up there with, at that moment, no way to get back down to the Earth. It wasn't as bad as it sounded, because we looked into the details of it, which I looked it up. What they were going to do, they had the ability, if they had to have used that damaged spacecraft, but they would have to have come down in full pressure suits and everything else to make sure that they survived. Eventually, of course, literally only a matter of 4 or 5 days later, they did launch another spacecraft, a Shenzhou spacecraft, to get up there to bring them back. And the one that was damaged was sent back to Earth. But for about a week, 7 days or so, strictly speaking, they had no way to get back safely. So the lifeboat idea of always having a means to get people back. And what this has done is it's opened the whole floodgates now into there needs to be some form of rescue ability of people on Earth to bring astronauts back from space. Now, that could lead, hopefully, to some form of, I won't use the words international rescue, because that has all sorts of connotations, but it does give rise to the idea of international cooperation and having docking ports on spacecraft that will work no matter what the spacecraft is. So it's not exciting, but it's certainly a realistic idea that maybe should be looked into. And the problem the Americans had when they couldn't come back down on the Boeing spacecraft last year, you recall they stayed up there for 9 months rather than just 3 weeks. They were never marooned. That was just the media hyped that one up. But that story, and now the Chinese story, has made people realise that, yes, you've got to have the ability to get these people back. And we have the technology. We haven't got the political will to do it, perhaps, and that's maybe what this is going to bring about.
The key word here is cooperation.
Exactly.
Because with more and more... we are, as always, being beaten by the clock, Howard, but international cooperation is a very good and positive note to finish on, really.
Especially the beginning
it?
Of this new year. Let's think about it, and hopefully things will come out in the next 6 to 12 months, and
let's hope
we'll be talking about it then.
The people who've got the power to make it happen do make it happen.
Indeed. Maybe Isaac Mann, that may be something he can pick up on.
It could very well be. There is a lot of kudos for the person who will move it forward and make it happen,
yes,
though, isn't
very
there?
Much so.
Because it can't go on the way is with this. All these have been OK, but OK isn't good enough, is it? Howard, you are more than OK, always. Blend by Noah
to you,
we
too.
Will look forward to welcoming you back in the studio in January.
Look forward to it, Judith.